This is Spectacle of Power, a fiction podcast written by Logan Reynolds, with sound by Timothy Brunskill. Chapter 2, The Thousand Bridge City. Asher Emmering closed his eyes, succumbing to the relaxation that his restless body so desperately needed. He'd hardly slept the night before. Too much was ticking over in his mind. Too many opportunities and possibilities and risks. In the steaming bath at the Cyrilee's calm house, he felt his muscles finally relent. Not long after, a familiar pattern of footsteps roused him. His eyes shot open, taking in the porcelain grandeur of the bathing chamber, and he twisted sideways to spy the approaching figure. A silver-haired man extended a hand in greeting, his lopsided gait unmistakable. John Cade Bastinian. From his back, Asher shifted to an upright position. He needed his wits about him. Matters of statecraft, after all, required a mindset of absolute precision. "You took your time," the young man scolded. "Terribly sorry, Asher. My associate was late," John Cade replied, not sounding apologetic in the slightest. His moustache was a well-groomed thicket. It made him look pompous, which he was, and sly. "A sorceress with a punctuality problem. How unoriginal." "Apparently there was some trouble on the road. Nothing to worry about." "She did, however, bring some scintillating news." Asher cocked his head. "Oh?" John Cade's eyes gleamed. "Can I get in?" "Aram, give me strength," Asher thought. But he nodded. A few moments of queasiness was a worthy price for information. John Cade abandoned his robes in a careless tangle, then lowered his aged body into the hot water. Across his upper abdomen and chest was an angry scar, healed by the passage of time, but undulled in its gruesome effect. He'd shown it to Asher before, ostensibly as a badge of pride, a souvenir from his days of hobnobbing with Cyril's criminal underground. These days, as the proprietor of the Valorwest Shipping Company, he sought to cultivate a cleaner image. "Well, what did the witch disclose?" "She reports another settlement has been destroyed. Sagetown, it's called, just a stone's throw south of Atelga. And this time, the devastation was wrought by Ithgarod's own hand. Boy, he's getting tenacious." Asher's lip curled in mild distaste. "Or careless, what's he playing at?" "Oh, he wanted to send a personal message, I expect, after those simpletons had the gall to refuse his accord. As for Atelga, for such an atrocity to occur under its nose, to a village within its own limits, Roma and her officials must be furious." "I just hope Ithgarod knows what he's doing," Asher said, calculating. "The moral high ground is easily abdicated, and not so easily restored." John Cade flashed his teeth. "Oh, but surely we're long past that point." Asher continued, ignoring him. "Well, it's only a matter of time before Atelga lobbies us for aid now. They'll want to firm up their military force, and not a moment too soon with that wolf nipping at their heels. The time for our part to play in this has arrived." "Right you are," John Cade nodded. "We should talk numbers then." Both men served on the Proctor's Council, Cyril's governing board, which over the years had garnered quite a reputation for backroom bargaining, nepotism, and a general lack of transparency. Once a proud institution of leadership, at least at the time of Cyril's independence and the establishment of its lofty constitution, since watered down, the Proctor's Council was now the source of much consternation among common folk. "Of the seven proctors, three are prepared to entertain a deal of some design with Ithgarod," John Cade said. "That's us, and witless Auric Plant, of course. Money well spent to shepherd him in line." Part of me still worries he was too easily brought." "I understand your concern, but trust me, his loyalty can be relied upon. As sure as the sun." "Fine, but even with Auric, we still need to flip two. With Luke Hyde, let's face it, those bridges are torched." "Oh, a door is never entirely closed," John Cade philosophized. Then seeing Asher's narrowing eyes added, "But I agree, he's not likely to be inclined to help us this time. Not after we had his wife incarcerated, albeit temporarily." Asher lifted his lean frame onto the ledge of the pool as John Cade watched him, his beady, sparrow-like eyes lingering a moment too long on the younger man's physique. "So that leaves Abe, Marson, and Paquin," Asher said, counting on his fingers. I don't fancy our chances with Abe now that he's found faith. He practically spat the last word. John Cade scratched his perfectly manicured moustache. But Marston still caught our jolly wine baron. I'd wager he could be persuaded. With enough of his fine vintage, the lout could be persuaded to walk off a short pier, Asher retorted, and smiled for the first time that evening. You're not wrong, young Asher, you're not wrong. And what of Paquin, then, your once betrothed? Ugh. Despite being a modern society in most respects, Cyril clung on to some antiquated traditions. Arranged marriages were still considered the proper and natural course, especially when they suited the interests of the houses being adjoined. Asher had been 16 when he received the news. His life was to be entwined with the heiress, Paquin Lingarda. Neither party was pleased with the arrangement. He still recalled her biting words as the pair hovered awkwardly in the corridor of her parents' great manor. You understand this will not work, right? I'm sorry, Asher. You're pretty enough to look at, and that might be enough for most girls. But my interests lie elsewhere. Pardon the bluntness, but you unsettle me. I'm not enthralled with the idea either, had managed, resentment inflating his words. Her rapier tongue had wasted no time wounding his pride. But there are reasons to put our own preferences aside, economic reasons. She had then made a dismissive noise in her throat. You sound just like your father, and mine. Worry not, Asher. I will see an end to this nonsense. The union was indeed scuppered, much to the chagrin of Asher's father. On the night he heard the news, he struck his son hard across the face. After all your mother and I have sacrificed for you, you might have at least tried to make a good impression. Good for nothing, swine! The pain of the memory felt disconcertingly fresh, despite being 15 years old. His father took ill in the same year, and while it was another 3 before the fever finally carried him off, his relationship with Asher was unmendably frayed. He had seen his son in a new, unflattering light, this time from the vantage point of others, as a sneering loner, handsome but hollow. But in the time since, Asher had proven himself worthy of the Emmerine family legacy, and much more still. He'd become a proctor, a man of real status and influence in the city, by rallying the most charming version of himself and cutting a few profitable alliances along the way. He'd succeeded in stilling the naysaying whispers of the Cyrilese ruling class, at least temporarily. It was said Cyril boasted the finest gossip mills in all of the continent. His only regret was that Paquin, the woman who had made him feel so small, had also ascended to the halls of power along with him. Fate, it seemed, had a bitter sense of humour. John Cade continued, I know you don't like to talk about Paquin, but listen, there could be an angle here. She's in a frail state, your girl, all holed up in that dower house. You've seen what her attendance is like at the Proctor's Council. Whether it's illness or something else, no one can say, but word is she's spooked by her own shadow. So I've heard, but how does this help us? There's nothing more persuasive than fear. Asher scoffed. Are you suggesting we strong-arm her, like a common pair of thugs? That is but one path. As the men were speaking, an attendant appeared between one of the calm house's arches and glided towards them. Good gentlemen, might I offer you some wine? Or help you to quench another thirst, perhaps? We offer the company of women and men, fully credentialed and recommended by the Guild of Reviving Hands? No, Asher curtly replied, irritated by being interrupted and swatting the man away with a gesture. The attendant's hospitable smile did not falter. Later for me, friend, John Cade said less abrasively. I'll seek you out in due course. The attendant bowed and turned to leave. Unlike John Cade's uneven stride, which had stirred the echoes of the bathing chamber, the attendant barely left a sound in his wake. He'd make a fine assassin, Asher quipped in his mind, before turning his attention back to John Cade. Did I hear you correctly? Did you wish for us to intimidate Proctor Lingarda? John Cade smirked. Maybe it will not be necessary. All I know is that winning this vote will be the single most important thing either of us do. The sorceress made it clear. If we help to secure Cyril's neutrality under the guise of ambivalence, indifference, concern that our involvement will widen the scope of the conflict, whatever, then they are willing to support our ambitions on the other side. Not only in reshaping the political landscape here in Cyril, but perhaps in reshaping the entire continent. Ithgrod understands the value of having allies that he can trust, especially for the new world he's building. Asher, my boy, if we just hold our noses and get through this trying period, there's everything to gain. Asher dressed quickly, covering himself in the maroon robes that communicated his high station, and emerged into the night. It was only a short walk back to his house, one that took him over a couple of ornately paved footbridges and along the edge of Jordica Bay. Hundreds of moored ships rocked gently in time with the breathing of the ocean, their decks honey-glazed in candlelight. Those who visited Cyril often found it difficult to satisfactorily articulate her beauty, such were the limitations of language. To Asher, though, she possessed a quality even greater than her aesthetic charm. A sort of receptiveness to ambition, he thought. While demarcation by class remained an obvious reality, and the lion's share of power still belonged to a few ruling houses, there existed in tandem to this an almost mythological reverence for the underdog. An unspoken respect, you might say, for the battler who was determined to climb the social ranks in possession of little more than hard work and a harder stomach. Ruthlessness, much as some might deny it, had solidified itself as a Cyrillese value. Asher lingered at the water's edge. It was a warm night, and the muted soundscape gave no indication of the city's vast population. He thought of his wife, Clementa, and wondered if she was in bed. He imagined her propped up with a wine goblet in hand, reading a dusty tome in the lamplight. It's just as well she finds companionship in her fantastical novels, Asher thought. These days her husband is barely home before midnight. I wonder if she sometimes suspects me of having an affair. He hoped not. Marrying Clementa had once been a pragmatic decision, but his affection for her was quite genuine now. Perhaps he was not such a monster. He continued along the promenade, passing only a handful of people, including a pair of giggling lovers. There was freedom in the darkness. Nobody recognized him. At least that was Asher's perception. As he passed a tavern, the Broadhearth, he was unaware of being appraised by a set of eyes on its third floor. The eyes, with lustrous silver irises that rippled like sand, belonged to a woman mostly beset in shadow. Even if by some random impulse Asher had looked up at that moment, he would not have been able to decipher her age, nor the expression she was making. For the next few minutes, she continued to watch him intently from her lodging. Eventually, he passed over another footbridge and disappeared around the corner. Something on her lap suddenly writhed, and with her gaze still fixed on the empty street, she moved to caress it. "What do you think?" the woman asked in a slow, trance-like voice. "Can we trust these people?" In the next installment of Spectacle of Power, the travelling party arrives in Cyril. We meet the haunted person who hired them, and we learn of a dark prediction that may yet have dire consequences. For additional information about the world and its characters, you might like to visit the compendium linked in the show notes. Also, to support the podcast, please consider joining our Patreon. This is an independent project, and your support is greatly appreciated. Thank you so much for listening.